Okay, Shalom Aleichem, good to welcome Avoisai. We are in Chavis Halvavis, Shalabi Tochen. Still in the preface of Shalabi Tochen. And I just repeat what we're doing now, what the Chavis Halvavis is doing here. Okay. I had a thought, I'll just mention this by the way. Different questions sometimes come up that take us in different directions. I was actually wondering if we dedicate every so often, like a half a year, just to questions on any subject. Just if anybody wants to send me an email, one way or the other, it's something that I'm thinking about. Okay. We'll continue to have questions at the end, and perhaps in addition, if people feel that there's that this would be worthwhile. Okay.
Can I just make one comment?
Please.
The Nunavuts of Saul, instead of the alchemist who said the modern person is actually the forger.
Is actually?
That's forger's bank.
Oh, the forger. I hear. A counterfeiter. I hear. Oh, okay. That's a good example. Very good.
So that's what they did. They couldn't.
Yeah, same idea. That's right. So you're bringing us right back into our subject. Right back into our subject. What are we up to here? We're beginning a certain exercise. Now I'm going to try this week to move through this quicker. We're beginning an exercise where the Chavis Halvavis is comparing a person with Bitachon to the alchemist. Or, as we just heard now, the counterfeiter, the contemporary counterfeiter, a person who basically has the ability to make himself as much money as he wants. What's the Chavis Halvavis doing here? Let's just remind ourselves. The Chavis Halvavis is, like we said, he's not considering the pros and cons of going into alchemy or counterfeiting. What he's doing is he's trying to illustrate for us how the most stable, financially secure reality that you can imagine is full of holes. So what I want to do, I think we got into important discussions last week, but it was a little bit sidetracked in the sense of we kept getting back to how it works with the person to be talking. What I actually want to do now, ironically, is to step away from that for a moment and just focus on one thing. The material stability of the alchemist or the counterfeiter, and showing how the most materially stable person is not that stable. We're going to get back to the Baal Bitachon. That's what the whole shiur is about. But right now, just to make this point, to dispel the illusion, if you will, of that person out there, he has it made. That's what we're trying to do now, to dispel that illusion. Oh, we'll use a mushroom from the Shla about this, just to preface our continuation here. Yes, thank you. Yeah. A mushroom from the Shla here. The Shla gives a mushroom about there was a group of people traveling at sea, and they'd been at sea for a long time. They were all desperate to put their feet on solid ground for a little bit of time. They still had a long time until they would reach their destination. But they passed by a small island, and they all decided, you know what, we've been at sea for so long, we're still going to be at sea for so long, let's take a little bit of a break, we'll get onto dry land, spend the day on dry land, and then we will resume our voyage. I got it. Sorry. Okay, I'm sorry. So, fine, they decided they're going to stop. They're going to get out and enjoy themselves on their island, on this island for a day. They get out, talking good to have their feet back on solid ground. And they're relaxing on the island. They know, okay, at night they're going to go back onto their ship and resume the voyage, but they're going to enjoy a good few hours of just being on good old solid ground. Okay, at one point they decide, we're going to make lunch. We're going to make a bonfire. Now, really, this island wasn't the island. It was a whale. Now, whales don't appreciate bonfires lit on their back. Truth is, I don't either. But whales don't appreciate bonfires being lit on their back. What do they do if a bonfire is lit on their back? Same thing you or I would do. They just dive underwater, right? So they lit this bonfire on the whale's back, and all of a sudden, the whale dove. And he dove underwater. All of a sudden, all these people find themselves flailing in the sea helplessly. They all just manage, sputtering, to somehow get back onto the ship. And all of a sudden, they realize that what they thought was solid ground was actually something very, very insecure and feeble. They had spent 3 hours there feeling like, oh, wow, now we're back, you know, on solid ground. But suddenly they realized this is very, very feeble and insecure, very precarious. It had been that way the whole time before when they thought that they were secure. They got back onto the ship, which seemed less secure, but now they realize that they're on decent, solid ground. What's the mashal the Shlach says? The mashal is that we're on that whale. We feel like, you know, Ulam Hazeh, we're on secure ground. We have good footing here. That's our reality in Ulam Hazeh. And on the contrary, we want to train ourselves to remove that sense of the world that I'm familiar with, my familiar frame of reference, Ulam Hazeh, the material world, of that being my crutch, my sense of stability, the material world that I'm familiar with, and to see if we can perhaps take that very, very not simple jump and move our sense of stability. We can formulate this in one of two ways. Move our sense of stability onto Hashem. That's where I am firmly planted. That's where I'm firmly planted, on Hashem. That's where my security is. That's where my stability is. Or if you want to put it differently, which is not really our subject right now, but it's another way of putting it, Olam Haba. You're really feeling like, I live in Olam Haba. I'm here to take care of a few things. Hashem sent me here. It's like, if I send a kid to the store, the kid is not meant to spend too much time making himself comfortable in the store and orienting himself. You get the things you need to get and you leave. If there's something uncomfortable about being in the store, so mishkefelech, something a little uncomfortable about being in the store, so say that you just finish doing what you need to do and you leave. So our place is Olam Haba. That's where we came from. That's where we're going back. As we're here now, 120, 150 years seems like a long time, but it isn't really when we're talking in the grander scheme of things. We came here to take care of a few things, but to really remember that it doesn't really matter. What we need to be focused on is our place in Olam Haba. But, yes, question.
Quick question. You're talking about the alchemist and money, financial security. Do we take it beyond that to whatever else, you know, any individual looks at the rest of the world and says, they've got it better this way or they've got it better that way?
Oh, okay. So the truth is, the Chavis HaLavis is going to take it beyond. One of the points that he's going to make is that you're looking at a person with financial stability. What about health? Right? So we'll see as we go along. So Yashar Koach, pulling us back to our subject, which sometimes I need a reminder to do every so often. But we're coming back to, this is really what the Chavis HaLavis is trying to do. He's trying to, in order to really get us to be Tachan, what he wants to do is a little bit shake our sense of security in the material world, and also to dispel the illusion that it exists elsewhere. Look at this fellow. You know, I'm struggling, but that person has it made. That person is all set up for life. So here we're again going to go through a recap what we saw last week briefly and move on to see the holes that he pokes in the stability of this alchemist, this person who basically has all the wealth he can want at his disposal, because he can create gold out of any metal. Or the mashal that you gave, the counterfeiter of our times, has all the machinery in his basement. So, again, point number one was that he depends on his equipment, etc. It's not always available to him. That's number one. Point number two was that he has to be, the work involved in the alchemy is something that involves chemicals, fumes, etc., which can kill him, besides the fact that he's constantly involved with it. Sometimes he has to do straight through all nights, etc. So, yeah, the money he'll have, but his stability is being assaulted in other ways in terms of his health. He might be shortening his life significantly. Next, number three. I'm going to try to move through this quickly. The alchemist is involved in an illegal trade. Alchemy was illegal, just like counterfeit is illegal. So, yeah, it's true that he has a source of financial stability, but he can't share it with anybody. This is a secret that he has to keep very well. Now, I just want to point out now, the Chovos HaLevavos is going to make four or five points that all revolve around the same point, that alchemy is illegal. So we're going to have to just break down exactly what his point is in each place. He cannot share his trade with anybody. It'll never earn him respect. It'll never earn him recognition, right? Whereas a person with bitachon, on the contrary, ultimately, living with bitachon is something that brings a person, it causes the people around you to respect you. It causes the people around you to hold you in high regard. Now, why is that so important as far as we're concerned? Why is it so important for us to, like, is that one of our agendas? We want people to respect us for our bitachon? Not necessarily. But the understanding that ultimately it's a form of kvod shamayim. It's a form of kvod shamayim. If we see people around us who we admire just because of the faith they exude, the bitachon that they exude, right, or whatever other principles they stand up for, this is something that we view as desirable. So, again, this person has a great trade, but it's not a means of respect. So that's number four. And number three. Number four is our V. The alchemist is always faced with a choice. We're always faced with a dilemma. He can either make a lot of gold at one time, and then he doesn't have to be busy with his alchemy for the next 5 years. And he can make himself a five-year supply at one time. Or he does on a day-by-day, a week-by-week basis. Now, this is a tough dilemma, because if he does on a five-year basis, then he's busy guarding it. It's not like he can't be moving around. He can't be schlepping it around with him all the time. He might lose it. If he does it on a day-by-day, week-by-week basis, it might not work out every day or every week. So the point is that, yes, he has this means of security, but it comes along with various dilemmas that might get him in trouble here, get him in trouble there. So that's another thing. When you're looking at that person with financial security, is his life really just smooth? Or does it constantly require him to be running up dead ends and making tough decisions? Next. Whereas again, the person with bitachon doesn't have dilemmas. He figures out what is a responsible expectation of me at this point. He does what he needs to do. If he doesn't see any responsible, reasonable efforts available to him, so he does. He moves forward with the trust that whatever Hashem wants for me, he'll do. And if he wants for me not to have, I'll be fine. That's what's best for me. So he isn't faced with torturous dilemmas. Sometimes he has to make a call. But if one has to make a call, let's say, should I take this route or that route in terms of my my finances, in terms of the job I should choose? There isn't that stress of, is this the right decision or is that the right decision? I might make the wrong call and then I'll mess myself up for life. Because he knows that all he has to do, Hashem is going to decide what he's going to get. All he has to do is make a reasonable, responsible decision. That you have to do. You have to apply the seichel to make a responsible decision. But you don't have the stress of, will it work out? How on earth should I guess whether it's a better idea for me to go into computers or to real estate? In trying to project the next 20 years, doesn't have to do that. You have to make a cheshbon. Is real estate a reasonable natural hishtadlis? A computer is a reasonable natural hishtadlis? If so, then you can't make a wrong decision. Because again, the results, don't worry about the results. Hashem says, you punch your card by doing a reasonable, responsible hishtadlis, and then leave it up to me to decide what you should get. So he isn't tortured by dilemmas. Number five, the fear that he lives in. This is very common. You have a person who's very, very financially stable, but he has reason to be afraid. Whether he has to be afraid of the law, whether he has to be afraid of the mafia, whether he has to be afraid of competitors. So, Ba'akimya tachas yirav afachad amalachtoi. The alchemist is in constant fear. Min agodav adakotan sheba'am. He is... he's scared that if anybody discovers his secret, it can do him in. So, again, the point here that the Chavis Olov is making is not the fact that he could get in trouble per se, just the stress that he lives with. Again, I'm going to break this down. When a person is involved in something that makes a lot of money, but is crooked, it's shady, it's against the law, so there's going to be a lot of cons involved. So the point that he's making now is living with that constant stress. Money is not a problem. Money is a non-issue. But his life is a constant stress. That itself is not a gishmaka life to live. A person who's living with bitachon is the other way around. He fears nobody. Again, we're talking about the ultimate level of bitachon. He fears nobody, and on the contrary, other people feel a certain awe of him. Okay, so just to bring this back together, we're not repeating the same point again and again. When we say that alchemy is illegal and that's a con, he's stressing a few different parts to that. The fact that it's illegal, A, means he can never share his successes with anybody. He can never get respect for it. It always has to stay a secret. B, he's faced with these dilemmas and he can't even rely on the law to protect him. Right? If he runs into some sort of problem, you have people who they do different dealings, this, that. They might have a lot of money, but it's a very precarious existence because if ever they run into a problem, they can't just go to the police. Right? They can't just sue the person. That'll open them up to all kinds of other problems. And this added point that he's making about when the money is not legal is just a life of stress. The money is there, but the stress is there too. Okay. Ashishi, what's number six in terms of here? You see that person with all that financial stability. When we talk about security, we automatically think money. But you need security in other areas also. What about health? It's the point that was raised here before. What about health? Is a person with money guaranteed that he'll never get into an accident? He doesn't have a all-inclusive guarantee that's going to carry him all through life. There are all kinds of other areas in life that this person might not have. So again, you look at this, you know, Mr. Pliny, he's all set up. But there are other areas in life that don't depend on money. Is he covered there too? Maybe he has serious health problems. Maybe he has other health problems, that, other problems that can hit a person that money doesn't help. What's his family situation? All kinds of other things that can hit that you have no guarantee for. Whereas once again, these things can take all the fun out of the wealth. They don't enable him to even enjoy it. Whereas the person with bitachon, the same way he doesn't feel any stress when it comes to money because Hashem is putting him into the best situation possible. So in all these other matters also, health versus illness, chalila, or whatever else it might be, whatever Hashem decides for me is exactly what's perfect for me and my neshama. Number seven, I keep on skipping a few lines here because I want to move through this list now. The alchemist has all the gold and silver that he wants, but that doesn't always make food available. Maybe at some point, there simply won't be food available in the city. Now, this is a little bit hard to envision in our days and the realities that we live in, but we'll try to make it a little bit more relevant momentarily. But he's making a general point that gold most often equals food, but doesn't always. There's a story told, I believe, about one of the famous rich people, maybe it was Rothschild, who was died locked in his Rothschild, who once went into his safe to take stock and got locked in. One of the Rothschilds, there were a lot of them, got locked in and couldn't get out. People didn't know where he was. And he ended up dying there with all of his gold and silver. And he wrote some note to that effect, that I'm dying of hunger surrounded by my wealth. Now, again, in contemporary times, we might think, okay, how relevant is this? But it comes back to the point that, okay, let's say food is not going to be the issue. But there could be other things that aren't necessarily available with money. We've talked before about different problems that a person can encounter. So here we're making the point that money very often won't solve those problems. I'll just know that you never know how these things can play themselves out. We actually once had an experience of not being able to get food, even though we had money. It was just a very enlightening experience, not an earth-shattering experience, but I just remember one day, years back, I don't remember if we even had children or not, both my wife and I, we both woke up very, very sick. Your mamish couldn't move. We had a makolet 5 minutes away. But we were brand new in the neighborhood and we didn't know anybody. And I just remember how we stopped trying to call neighbors and ask them to get us things. We don't know anybody. We were just hungry that day. We had money. That wasn't the issue. There was a makolet 5 minutes away. So for me, that was actually an experience that brought me benefit. In the end, we were fine. We survived. We got food. But it was actually an experience that, you know, I took away with me that we missed a couple of meals and we were mamish hungry with the money. So again, this is not so common, but he's making the point that money doesn't always equal having your needs. Okay. Number eight. When you look at this alchemist, so apparently the lifestyle was such, another symptom of the fact that what he's doing is shady, what he's doing is outside of the law. He's always moving around. He never lives in one place for too long. He moves from place to place because of his fear that maybe his secret will be discovered. That itself is not a fun life. So this is also something. You see, a person might have that financial security, but once again, that itself might be reason, even when it's not illegal. Sometimes that just requires a person to constantly be on the move, even if it's not an issue of being illegal. It's just not a geschmack of life. He has to move here for his business. He has to move there for his business. He has to be traveling all around for his business. It's just not a settled life. He has the money, but the settled life he doesn't have. Okay. Bachi. And it's coming on to the really big one. Like to laven habalakimia, like to laven akimia shalebachrisai. this alchemist has a means of financial security, but that only covers him up until the grave. It doesn't take him any further. We would like to be supported after that. Right? We live with the reality that that's really where life starts. So I would like to have a means of sustenance that will continue to sustain me afterwards. There was a famous story. I heard that it's a true story, but then again, every story that you hear is, you're hearing is a true story. So I'm not vouching for it, but it's a very hush of a point. A famous story, the story went around of a very wealthy man. This was a philanthropist who supported a lot of tzedakah and a lot of Torah institutions. And very wealthy, had quite a number of children, conscientious man. And when his time came, so he left, he told his children that he wrote two tzavos, two wills. One he wants them to read immediately after he dies, before the Leviathan. And the other, afterwards, whenever they would do it naturally. Okay. So this person passed away, and they opened up the first will, and he wanted to be read immediately, before the Leviathan. Very strange request. He says there, he's asking to be buried in his socks. He named a certain pair of socks. He wants to be buried in his socks. Now he says, I know that this is an issue according to Halacha, but I'm asking you to speak to the Rabbanim I was close with, and tell them that this was very important to me. I have my reasons. This specific pair of socks I want to be buried with. And, you know, they know everything I've been doing for the Tzibur all these years. I would like them to make the effort to please find a way of being matir, that I should be able to be buried with my socks. It was very important to me. Okay? Very bizarre request, strange request. But that's what he wants. So they went to these Rabbanim, and again, these Rabbanim, he had helped them with their moistis, etc., all kinds of things. This is the request. Basically, the response of the Rabbanim was, it just doesn't fly. It's not allowed. He's asking for a rope that it's so important to him. Basically, the response was, look, where he is now, he'd rather be buried without the sacks. He doesn't want his burial to be compromised, like the halacha. And therefore, at the end of the day, went through the processes, they tried. No socks. Then they opened the second will afterwards during the shiva. And there he wrote, my dear children, I wanted to make a point to you. I understood that I was buried without my socks, and I'm grateful for that. But I wanted to make a point to you. You're going to be inheriting all my money now. I want you to realize this. With all the money I had, I wanted to take along one pair of socks. I wasn't given that. Right? So realize the money has limited benefit. So this is the point that he's making. Like we said before, you came into Olam Hazeh, you came here to take care of a few things for a relatively short amount of time. Feels like a long time. I think already at our stage of life, I'm probably younger than many of the people here, but you already see how it kind of like, each year goes by faster. So all that money is not going to help once you hit that stage, right? Whereas when you're talking about bitachon, if that's your source of security, so not only are you in a place where you move through life knowing that you're fine, but that sense itself is a major source of schar la'olam haba. That's going to be such a source of security and stability, of benefit, of profit, even when you move on. For all the rest of eternity, you'll be drawing off that source of security, the bitachon. Now number 10 is, and this is again coming back to that same point from yet another angle. As we said, this is a highly illegal business, this alchemy. If the alchemist is discovered, he will be put to death for it. I don't know if maybe it was considered some form of sorcery. I don't know exactly, but whatever it is, he'd be put to death for it. So what right now looks like a benefit can actually be a means of his demise. Now again, we want to apply this in a broader way. You never know with anything material. This is really a challenge with anything material. Again, we always know when we receive some kind of material benefit, some material stroke of good luck, we know that right now, it's great. That's all we know. But where it's going to lead to, so many stories around us, just looking at the world around, there are famous stories. And then there are stories that each of you have seen in your private lives, if you've been around the block enough, of people that something happened that they thought was the best thing in the world for them, or something that really put them in a great place materially. And ultimately, it really proved to get them to lousy places. Bobby DeMille used to say that John Kennedy thought that being elected as president was the best thing that happened to him. Right? And it's like this many times. So you look at different cases where, just think back, the Shlach talks about this. The Shlach says that the Jewish people in the Midbar, right, when they saw in the Midbar, they wanted more meat. They wanted more meat. So they clamored for it, right? They picketed. They want more meat. So what happened? Hashem sent a slew of slav, right? Tons of slav came down. So imagine these people at that moment. At that moment, when all the slav is coming down, okay, maybe we didn't daven nicely enough. Maybe we should have expressed ourselves differently. But lemaisa, Hashem gave it b'shefa, very happy. Everybody is picturing making their plans, they're changing their menus, and picturing the barbecue he's going to have with his family tonight. The death is already there in the bird, right? Adenu abasar ben shinehem, the pasuk says, while the meat was still between their teeth, they started dropping dead. So just think of the contrast between how excited they were about it and where it got them to. So it's a little bit pathetic that when can you ever really know for sure that something material is really getting you to a good place and not chas v'shalom, the opposite? So don't lean too much on anything material. Whereas, once again, with bitachon, it's exactly the other way around. The more a person is relying on Hashem, the more Hashem will be there to aid him. I just want to come back. We made a harsh point, but I just do want to add a little more insight to that. There is a way of ensuring that if something material does come your way, that it will be of lasting benefit. And that is to immediately take it again. If you're just taking it in the material sense, you never really know. Could be not. But if whenever some material benefit comes your way, you immediately take it and turn it into ruchnius. Turn it into ruchnius. You now know that this stroke of good fortune is actually something that is benefiting you now and forever. Even if you lose it in another week. What do I mean by that? How do you turn it into ruchnius? Very many ways. But we do that. Chazal made it into a habit for us. Just you have to then take it and apply it and extend it and apply it further. You got a benefit this morning. What did you get? You got breakfast, right? What was your breakfast? Egg and toast. Okay. So now you want that egg and toast to be something eternal? Because I'll tell you, very simple. Make a moitzi before eating the bread. Wash your hands too. Bench afterwards. Now that breakfast is Olam Haba. That breakfast is Olam Haba. And the Gemara tells us other things along these lines. And the truth is that we do this in a regular. Many of these things, Chazal worked into us as habits. But appreciate the habit that you have and turn it into a principle, into a guiding light of the way you'll approach other things. We have a principle of Ma'aser Ksavim. A person gets income, gives Ma'aser Ksavim. What are you doing with the Ma'aser Ksavim? It's not just that Hashem expects you to give tzedakah. There's something more than that. I don't know if it's more or less. There's something additional going on there. This money is going to be a means of avodas Hashem. Now, Hashem also allows me to keep some of it for myself. Part of it is for me to buy myself food. But I'm showing Hashem kiviyachol, I'm showing myself. I get benefits from Hashem. They are going to be means of serving Hashem. Right? Like the Mishnah in Ovid says, kimcha hakol o miyodcha nasanu lach. We get it all from you, and from your hand, we give to you, so to speak. Right? But to think in those terms. Think in terms of a bracha. Think in terms of my success. and then think of all the things that happen. What can I do whenever some sort of material benefit comes my way, some break that I got, some windfall, whatever it is, to say, how can I immediately turn this into something ruchnius? In a most basic way, it's turning to Hashem and saying, I acknowledge that this is from you. I acknowledge that this is from you. Thank you. Express that to your family. That already turns what you got into something eternal. Hoidot to Hashem, the Shevach to Hashem, already makes that benefit into something that is earning you Olam Haba. Shmishon Pinkus, he says it like this. He says, again, we're all from Jews. We're all going to make a bracha before we eat or drink something. But picture the following. He puts it like into more, he had a very unique way of bringing things to life very intensely. So you walk into your house on a very hot day, you're parched, you're very thirsty. What are you going to do? Well, you're going to go to the fridge. You have there, you have cold juice, you have cold water. So you take a cold cup of water out of the fridge. And that cup of water, how much is that cup of water worth? The most you can make of it, go to some fancy hotel, right, where you're going to pay $10 for that cup of water, right? But that's about it. But really, I'm talking market value. What is that cup of cold water worth? A nickel, what, 10 cents, right? So it can begin and end with that. You just received a benefit that's worth 10 cents. It's going to be more than that because you're going to stop and you're going to make a bracha. But he said, wait a minute. Realize that now you have an open check in front of you. What is that cup of cold water going to be? If you can actually stop for a moment, catch yourself and say, the bracha is not just like what I say in order to fill the time until the cup actually makes its way to my mouth. And it has to be timed exactly so. But 1 minute, I'm going to focus on the fact that right now I'm thirsty. Hashem is providing me with this. Yeah, give it to me in advance. You put it into the pipes when I poured it into the pitcher in the first place. Nothing fancy, nothing mineral, nothing whatever. But I focus on the fact that Hashem prepared that for me in advance. And I'm going to put a little bit more thought, a little bit more feeling into that shahako. Now that cup of water is worth eternity. It's providing you with an enhanced existence for billions of years. Since you have an open check in front of you, you have an open check in front of you and you're about to drink a cup of cold water. And obviously you understand that the same applies if you're about to eat a fruit and take it from there as an approach to everything material, everything Gashmias. Everything in Gashmias can be moved into the realm of Ruchnias, can be moved into the realm of eternity by that little bit of thought and figuring out what can I do to harness this into Avodas Hashem. Whether in terms of Shelach Vaidah, most basic level of bracha, or whether in terms of what I can do, what mitzvahs I can do with it. That's why, again, coming back to my suffering, etc. People who make an agenda out of, I knew such a person. He said that he makes an agenda out of looking to pick people up in his car. Why? Because he wants his car to be something kavush. Wants his car to be something kavush. So that's why he makes it a project to even go a little bit out of his way to go to places where there might be people waiting. Again, that's just an example. It's just an example. But you get the idea. The idea is that if we got something material, we want to ensure that this is going to be something that will bring me eternal benefit, find a way to translate it into Ruchnius. And then, just to add with this, as Rabbi Avigdor Miller would say, he said that we say, Goymel chasadim toiv. Hashem grants us good chasadim. Isn't that a little redundant? Good chasadim? So Rabbi Avigdor Miller said like this. He said, a chesed is a chesed, but you have to understand that there's a whole added layer of good there. Even just taking health, right? Health either is a chesed because it makes your life comfortable, makes your life healthy. But it can be so much more chesed than that. It can be chesed for the here and now. It's chesed. You're enjoying the apple. You're enjoying your health. You're enjoying the house. You're enjoying the car. But there's a whole added layer of chesed, the chesed that Hashem is providing you with for, like we said before, billions of years, for all of eternity. Access the deeper layer of the chesed. There's so much more chesed there than the chesed that just hits you in the face. Access that layer also. And then, yeah, you will be incorporating the gashmius of your life into your ruchnius too. And if you're really taking it in that direction, then all of your life can be a means of olam haba, going to sleep, if you approach it in that way. Everything. There's no wasted time, there's no wasted energy, and there's no wasted assets. Anything that you own can all be a part of this system. Okay, we'll stop here. If there's any questions, they're welcome.
Thank you very, very much.
A good to you.